I like having a handful of programs up at the same time.
I can see that.
Mick gestured at the empty monitors, the wallpaper of cherry blossoms framing the Jefferson Memorial. Donald laughed and rubbed his face. He could feel his own stubble, had forgotten to eat dinner. The project had only begun a week ago, and he was already a wreck.
I'm heading out for a drink, Mick told him. You want to come? Sorry, I got a little more to do here.
Mick clasped his shoulder and squeezed until it hurt.
I hate to break it to you, man, but you're gonna have to start over. You bury an ace like that, there's no coming back. Come on, let's get a drink. Seriously, I can't.
Donald twisted out from his friend's grasp and turned to face him. I'm working on those plans for Atlanta. I'm not supposed to let anyone see them. It's top secret. For emphasis, he reached out and closed the folder on his desk. The senator had told him there would be a division of labor, and that the walls of that divide needed to be a mile high.
Oh, top secret.
Mick waggled both hands in the air.
I'm working on the same project, asshole.
He waved at the monitor.
And you're doing the plans? What gives? My GPA was higher than yours.
He leaned over the desk and stared at the taskbar.
AutoCAD? Cool. Come on, let's see it.
Yeah, right.
Calm the fuck on. Don't be a child about this.
Donald laughed.
Look, even the people on my team aren't going to see the entire plan, and neither will I. That's ridiculous. No, it's how government shit like this gets done. You don't see me prying into your part in all this.
Mick waved a hand dismissively.
Whatever. Grab your coat. Let's go.
Fine. Sure. Donald patted his cheeks with his palms, trying to wake up.
I'll work better in the morning. Working on a Saturday? Thurman must love you.
Let's hope so. Just give me a couple of minutes to shut this down.
Mick laughed. Go ahead. I'm not looking.
He walked over to the door while Donald finished up. When Donald stood to go, his desk phone rang. His secretary wasn't there, so it was someone with his direct line. Donald reached for it and held a finger up to Mick.
Helen?
Someone cleared their throat on the other end. A deep and rough voice apologized.
Sorry. No.
Oh. Donald glanced up at Mick, who was tapping his watch.
Hello, sir. You boys going out?
Senator Thurman asked. Donald turned to the window.
Excuse me?
You and Mick. It's a Friday night. Are you hitting the town?
Just the one drink, sir.
What Donald wanted to know was how the hell the senator knew Mick was there.
Good. Tell Mick I need to see him first thing Monday morning. My office. You too. We need to discuss your first trip down to the job site.
Oh. Okay.
Donald waited, wondering if that was all.
You boys will be working closely on this moving forward.
Good. Of course.
As we discussed last week, there won't be any need to share details about what you're working on with other project members. The same goes for Mick.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I remember our talk.
Excellent. You boys have a good time. Oh, and if Mick starts blabbing, you have my permission to kill him on the spot.
There was a breath of silence, and then the hearty laugh of a man whose lungs sounded much younger than his years.
Ah.
Donald watched Mick, who had taken out the plug from a decanter, to take a sniff.
Okay, sir. I'll be sure to do that. Great. See you Monday.
The senator hung up abruptly. As Donald returned the phone to its cradle and grabbed his coat, his new monitor remained quietly perched on his desk, watching him blankly. Chapter 6. The Year 2110. Silo 1. Troy's beaten-up plastic meal tray slid down the line behind the spattered sheet of glass. Once his badge was scanned, a measured portion of canned string beans fell out of a tube and formed a steaming pile on his plate. A perfectly round cut of turkey plopped from the next tube, the ridges still visible from the tin. Mashed potatoes spat out at the end of the line like a spitwad from a child's straw. Gravy followed with an unappetizing squirt. Behind the serving line stood a heavy-set man in white coveralls, hands clasped behind his back. He didn't seem interested in the food. He concentrated on the workers as they lined up for their meals. When Troy's tray reached the end of the line, a younger man in pale green coveralls and probably not out of his 20s arranged silverware and napkins by the plate. A glass of water was added from a tightly packed tray nearby. The final step was like a ritualized handshake, one Troy remembered from the months of orientation. A small plastic shot glass was handed over, a pill rattling in the bottom, a blurry blue shape barely visible through the translucent cup. Troy shuffled into place. "Hello, sir." A young grin, perfect teeth. Everyone called him sir, even those much older. It was discomforting no matter who it came from. The pill rattled in the plastic. Troy took the cup and tossed the pill down. He swallowed it dry, grabbed his tray, and tried not to hold up the line. Searching for a seat, he caught the heavy-set man watching him. Everyone in the facility seemed to think Troy was in charge, but he wasn't fooled. He was just another person doing a job, following a script. He found an empty spot facing the screen. Unlike that first day, it no longer bothered him to see the scorched world outside. The view had grown oddly comforting. It created a dull ache in his chest, which was near to feeling something. A mouthful of potatoes and gravy washed away the taste of the pill. Water was never up to the task, could never take away the bitterness. Eating methodically, he watched the sun set on the first week of his first shift. 25 more weeks to go. It was a countable number phrased like that. It seemed shorter than half a year. An older gentleman in blue overalls with thinning hair sat down diagonally across from him, polite enough not to block the view. Troy recognized the man, had spoken with him once by the recycling bin. When he looked up, Troy nodded in greeting. The cafeteria hummed pleasantly as they both ate. A few hushed conversations rose and faded. Plastic, glass, and metal beat out a rhythmless tune. Troy glanced at the view and felt there was something he was supposed to know, something he kept forgetting. He awoke each morning with familiar shapes at the edges of his vision, could feel memories nearby, but by the time breakfast came, they were already fading. By dinner, they were lost. It left Troy with a sadness, a cold sensation, and a feeling like a hollow stomach, different from hunger, like rainy days as a child when he didn't know how to fill his time. The gentleman across from him slid over a little and cleared his throat. "Things going okay?" he asked. He reminded Troy of someone. Blotchy skin hung slightly loose around his weathered face. He had a drooping neck, an unsightly pinch of flesh hanging from his Adam's apple. "Things?" Troy repeated. He returned the smile.
"Anything, I suppose. Just checking in. I go by Hal."
The gentleman lifted his glass. Troy did the same. It was as good as a handshake. "Troy," he said. He supposed to some people it still mattered what they called themselves. Hal took a long pull from his glass. His neck bobbed, the gulp loud. Self-conscious, Troy took a small sip and worked on the last of his beans and turkey.
I've noticed some people sit facing it, and some sit with their backs to it.
Hal jerked his thumb over his shoulder. Troy looked up at the screen. He chewed his food, didn't say anything.
I reckon those who sit and watch, they're trying to remember something, Hal said.
Troy swallowed and forced himself to shrug.
And those of us who don't want to watch, Hal continued, I figure we're trying our best to forget.
Troy knew they shouldn't be having this conversation, but now it had begun, and he wanted to see where it would lead.
It's the bad stuff, Hal said, staring off toward the elevators. Have you noticed that? It's just the bad stuff that slips away. All the unimportant things we remember well.
Troy didn't say anything. He jabbed his beans, even though he didn't plan on eating them.
It makes you wonder, don't it, why we all feel so rotten inside.
Hal finished up his food, nodded a wordless goodbye, and got up to leave. Troy was left alone. He found himself staring at the screen, a dull ache inside that he couldn't name. It was the time of evening just before the hills disappeared, before they darkened and faded into the cloud-filled sky. Chapter 7. The Year 2049. Washington, D.C. Donald was glad he had decided to walk to his meeting with the senator. The rain from the week before had finally let up, and the traffic in DuPont Circle was at a crawl. Heading up Connecticut and leaning into a stiffening breeze, Donald wondered why the meeting had been moved to Kramer Books, of all places. There were a dozen superior coffee houses much closer to the office. He crossed a side street and hurried up the short flight of stone steps to the bookshop. The front door to Kramer's was one of those ancient wooden affairs older establishments hung like a boast, a testament to their endurance. Hinges squeaked, and actual bells jangled overhead as he pushed open the door, and a young woman straightening books on a center table of bestsellers glanced up and smiled hello. The cafe, Donald saw, was packed with men and women in business suits sipping from white porcelain cups. There was no sign of the senator. Donald started to check his phone, see if he was too early, when a Secret Service agent caught his eye. The agent stood, broad-shouldered, at the end of an aisle of books in the small corner of Kramer's that acted as the cafe's bookshop. Donald laughed at how conspicuously hidden the man was, the earpiece, the bulge by his ribs, the sunglasses indoors. Donald headed the agent's way, the wooden boards underfoot groaning with age. The agent's gaze shifted his way, but it was hard to tell if he was looking at Donald or toward the front door.
I'm here to see Senator Thurman, Donald said, his voice cracking a little. I have an appointment.
The agent turned his head to the side. Donald followed the gesture and peered down an aisle of books to see Thurman browsing through the stacks at the far end.
Ah, thanks.
He stepped between the towering shelves of old books, the light dimming and the smell of coffee replaced with the tang of mildew mixed with leather.
What do you think of this one?
Senator Thurman held out a book as Donald approached. No greeting, just the question. Donald checked the title embossed in gold on the thick leather cover.
Never heard of it, he admitted.
Senator Thurman laughed.
Of course not. It's over 100 years old. And it's French. I mean, what do you think of the binding?
He handed Donald the book. Donald was surprised by how heavy the volume was. He cracked it open and flipped through a few pages. It felt like a law book, had that same dense heft, but he could see by the white spaces between lines of dialogue that it was a novel. As he turned a few pages, he admired how thin the individual sheets were. Where the pages met at the spine, they had been stitched together with tiny ropes of blue and gold thread. He had friends who still swore by physical books, not for decoration, but to actually read. Studying the one in his hand, Donald could understand their nostalgic affection.
"The binding looks great," he said, brushing it with the pads of his fingers. "It's a beautiful book."
He handed the novel back to the senator.
"Is this how you shop for a good read? You mostly go by the cover?"
Thurman tucked the book under his arm and pulled another from the shelf.
"It's just a sample for another project I'm working on."
He turned and narrowed his eyes at Donald. It was an uncomfortable gaze. He felt like prey.